All right, this is Film Study with Ken McCusick. This is episode number 5 for 2017. It is where we're going to talk about the offense after the Ravens' victory over week 1, 20-0 against the Cincinnati Bengals. I am Josh Soroka, and joining me, as always, the man whose name is in the title of the show, Mr. Ken McCusick. How are you doing?
Life's good, Josh. How about you?
It's doing okay. Doing all right. Ask me in about an hour when this Oriole game's over, and we'll see.
Yeah.
So
I don't want to know. Don't tell me.
All right, we'll see. But it's all right. If you are just joining us now in episode number 5, you should go back and listen at least to episode number 4, because episode number 4 was just came out yesterday or the day before, and that's when we really broke down the defense from week 1, because week 1 was really a defensive ball game for the Ravens. Today's not going to be as fun. At least I don't think so. We're talking about the offense. The offense wasn't fun.
Feel good episode, that first defensive article and podcast. Less so on this offensive line play, although it wasn't bad, and the offense did what it needed to do to win.
Right, and that's, I guess that's how Ravens have gone to Super Bowls in the past that way, with just ball control, and the offense handled that. Let's get started. Let's start with Joe Flacco, because the offense, he's the guy. The offense is all behind him. There was a big deal made about him not being able to practice in any of the preseasons. I guess he didn't even really take the practice field until the week before this game.
That's right. I mean, all camp, very secret and hush-hush about exactly what his status was, exactly when he was coming back. I would describe Harbaugh as getting progressively more testy with questions about Flacco and about injuries in general as camp progressed. And then all of a sudden, the timetable was there. He was coming back for certain by opening day, and other pronouncements of the same type were made. And he had a week or 10 days to practice with the team, and certain enough, he was back and playing with versus the Bengals.
Right. Now, the Ravens, their official stance pretty much the entire time was, I think he'll play week 1. He should be ready for week 1. It was other people outside the organization and some national pundits and media that were saying he could miss 6 weeks, he could miss 8. And the Ravens pretty much stuck to week 1 he'll play.
Well, I mean, the Ravens don't really tell you much publicly. And whatever they said originally, you have to wonder if it still holds after 3 or 4 weeks of them saying nothing. So I wouldn't say the Ravens were crystal clear about their message. I will say that I think the media in general is too excited about trying to get the answer to that. I mean, Josh, you and I are Ravens fans, obviously. We understand that the Ravens have to keep certain secrets from us, just the way our government has to keep certain secrets about national defense, for example, from us. So, it's just one of these things. We don't want the other team to have an advantage, and we don't feel the need to know certain things like that.
I get that. But do we even know now that we saw him play a week 1? Do we even know how bad this injury is or what it is with his back?
Yeah, that's a really good question. I mean, he did take a couple very hard hits, a quarterback hit from Dunlap in particular that really hammered him to the ground. The sack, he was taken down fairly hard. Another quarterback hit that got turned back, he was also hit fairly hard. So he took a few hard hits in this game. Didn't appear to have any lingering problems. But then again, he didn't throw the ball down the field at all in this game. The longest pass he threw was about 17 yards from the line of scrimmage on the first play of Q2. So really did not air it out even once, which is the first time I can ever remember that happening. He threw 10 passes in the wild card game at New England in 2009, went 4 of 10. The Ravens won by running the ball 52 times in that game. But he did have one deep attempt on 3rd and 2 to Williams down the middle of the field, I recall, in that game. So it's very unusual that Flacco does not lean on a combination of the deep ball plus a lot of short passes.
Sure, sure. Yeah, that is the history of Flacco. Is he can throw the deep ball, he can spot it, so the Ravens use it. Do you think that's because of back injury, or do you think that's because he hasn't had the time to really get down the timing with his wide receivers?
Well, I can give you those two reasons are legitimate, and then a third reason that's legitimate is that the Ravens had the game in hand and didn't want to take any true. Unnecessary risk. So at least those three are plausible reasons, and hopefully we won't even find out next week because the Ravens will play a similar game where it's one-sided and they can afford to let Joe not throw and just run the ball in the second half.
I mean, hey, if they want to win 20-0 for the entire season and Joe never throws anything larger than 17 yards, I think I'll be okay with however Joe's back is.
Yeah, that'd be a very fine result.
It would be. All right, so since Joe did not throw the ball that much, a lot of people are making a big deal on the Ravens and their commitment to the run on Sunday.
Yeah, I think I hear that, and I've seen in the paper, and wow, they really showed great commitment to the run. And all. I mean, it takes an optimal set of circumstances for the Ravens to do what they did in terms of running the ball this Sunday, and I doubt that it will be repeated this season. But, I mean, if you really look at all the reasons, and I'm going to give you a relative valuation of each. Maybe you can come up with a couple too, Josh.
All right.
Let's start with Vontaze Burfict. He wasn't playing in the game. He was suspended. You know, is that a meaningful reason why the Ravens ran a lot? Well, no, I think it was much more situational than that. But I'd say a 4, if on a scale of 1 to 10, that Vontaze Burfict wasn't in there. And they had some inside linebackers they could actually exploit. You know, one thing is that the Bengals very frequently rush 4 and drop 7 versus Flacco, which has given him fits in the past in terms of interceptions, and they wanted to avoid that and force them to come up and stop the run. Again, I don't think a very significant relative value of that, maybe a 3 on a scale of 1 to 10, that it was that. You can come up with others. Josh, help me out.
Yeah, I mean, the one to me when I was just sitting there watching the game, the easy one is the same reason you weren't worried about Joe throwing the long ball. The game was in control the whole time, so it's just like you would if you had the lead in the fourth quarter. You run the ball to try to get the time to run out. We had control the whole game. There was no need to do anything but let the clock keep running.
That's right, and that's really the central concern, is that running provided a means to shorten the game with a big lead. And that's an absolute 10 on the relative scale. You know, they wanted to avoid turnovers at the beginning of the second half. They were having some success running the ball in the third quarter. You know, that played a factor. But basically, there's a simple line that I've first heard from football outsiders, is that teams don't win because they run. They run because they win. So you run the ball a lot because you're winning the game. You don't win the game because you're running a lot. That just doesn't provide the value. And if you look at this game, the Ravens really only got 3 points off their running game. As much as they ran the ball, as much as they controlled the game with it, their first drive was primarily passing, leading to the field goal. The second drive was primarily the 48-yard pass to Macklin, which we're going to talk about a little later. The third play was a 2-yard run following the interception that returned the ball to the 2-yard line. So that was a defensive score, in essence. And then they had the 15 or 17-yard play drive for the field goal that was basically all running that got them into position for the last 3 points. But they really didn't score at all off their running game. They really just controlled the game and got the game done with it.
Right. You want to win the game and not get anyone injured. Once you are up that and control the game like that, you're really just trying to end the game with no injuries and get out of there with the win. So, yeah, the easiest way to do that is just run the ball.
That's right.
Okay, I guess I'm trying to think about running the ball, and is that something – I know we're going to get to the offensive line scoring in a little bit, and we'll really break down the offensive line, but is that something that you also run the ball because – you don't trust that offensive line yet?
Well, I mean, the offensive line kind of delivered in this game in terms of ample time and space, which we'll talk about a little bit.
We'll get to that.
Part of that was due to the fact that they did run the ball a lot. So, you know, the Ravens, when Joe Flacco lines up under center, which he did for much of this game, there's a much better chance that the defense really has to stay back on their heels. When he's in the shotgun, those four guys in the line of scrimmage can kind of pin their ears back and rush. You might have somebody else rush, a linebacker, a slot corner, whatever it might be, to provide additional pressure. So it really does create a more difficult situation for Joe, who has not been the best under pressure.
Okay. Well, let's get to Joe and his play. We all saw the big pass he had was the cross route to Jeremy Macklin, mm-hmm. Which I think kind of solidified us that, okay, well, Macklin can catch the ball. I guess he will be the guy to help us out this year. But how about Joe?
Yeah, I mean, a couple of things on that play were really terrific, and that play's worth a discussion of its own.
Okay.
But they came to the line of scrimmage, and the Bengals showed cover zero, which means they had seven guys up there inside the slot receiver that showed blitz. Okay? And the Ravens had one man in the backfield but four on the outside, including Watson, who was lined up at tight end. So what happened was Macklin, who was on the left side, crossed the field to the middle. I'm sorry. Let's tell the story in order. Flacco came and he saw all the guys at the line of scrimmage and audibled out of the base call. So whatever the base call was, whether it was a run or some other pass, he audibled away from it and called this rub route that they apparently had ready in their playbook. And fantastic that he could do it. I wouldn't trust any other quarterback to pick up on exactly what was going on and call it at the line of scrimmage, but great job by Flacco. So anyway, what the rub route consisted of was Watson crossing the field from right to left while Macklin crossed the field from left to right. And where they met at that point of the X, so to speak,
right.
Watson very closely ran by the corner that was covering Macklin, and that was Darquez Dennard, number 21. If you go back and look at this on Game Pass, I'd highly suggest it because it doesn't translate as well, obviously, to describing this play. But as he ran by Darquez Dennard, what will often happen is he'll make an attempt to either give him an elbow, give him a shoulder, bump him hard in some way. And then you can draw a flag on that. You often will draw an offensive pass interference flag for doing that. But he didn't. He just missed him. And as it happened, the player who was trying to cover Wallace, who was George Iloka, the safety, came up and put his arm in front of Dennard, obstructing him. So they did all the work for us.
Gotcha.
And Macklin then came free, and there was nobody else to catch him. He was covered by one man, and there was no safety behind the play at that point because everybody's up rushing the quarterback. Ball is out in less than about 1.2 seconds, so it was out almost immediately at the snap. So the line did not have to hold up versus that seven-man rush, which actually got dropped to a six-man rush. But it was a seven-man rush. And nobody in that period of time, obviously, could get to Flacco, and the line held up.
All right, and yeah, so the Bengals basically were the Bengals on that play and helped us out.
Yeah, it was unusual that a defense would help you out in that way, but we remember back to the Giants game last year at the Meadowlands. The Ravens unfortunately helped out the Giants on Odell Beckham's game-winning touchdown catch of 66 yards.
Right.
And our buddy Tavon Young got tripped up by Weddle, who was behind him, so it was very unfortunate, but similar play.
Oh, I see. Gotcha. All right, let's get to the ample time and space. We explained it on yesterday's episode, on episode number 4. And it's basically, to sum it all up, it means Joe has time to look at his receivers and make a play.
Yeah, so it's 3 seconds of time from the time the ball first moves to the snap. And I can actually time that, you can too, very accurately with your DVR by simply using a click method. So if you go, your DVR will, if you pause and then you hit fast forward on a DirecTV DVR anyway, you go forward 1/30th of a second. So it takes 30 frames, if you want to call it, per second to record.
See, when I'm watching the game, I just act like it's flag football, and as soon as the ball snapped, I'm there going, 1 Mississippi, 2 Mississippi, 3 Mississippi. I said, all right, Joe's got time.
You could do it that way, and you'd be accurate 98% of the time.
Yeah, it annoys everyone else I'm watching the football game with, though.
I can imagine you doing that. That is kind of funny. In any case, the 3 seconds and 120-degree arc centered on the intended receiver. So if Josh is standing over by the right sideline as I'm looking over there, to my right across your podcast dial, I've got to have 60 degrees of clear space to step into that throw to hit Josh, and then I've got ample time and space. I still wouldn't be able to hit him in a million years, but I would have ample time and space to do so.
Sure. Ample time for an NFL quarterback. I think you'd need a little bit more time.
Yeah. I don't know what amount of time you could give me that I'd have to hit you with a pass at the normal out route distance.
Yeah, I think I need at least 10 seconds minimum.
Okay. I'll be the receiver then.
All right.
Okay.
All right, so Joe and Ample Time.
So Ample Time and Space. So I've got statistics that lead back to 2010 where I've been scoring Ample Time and Space, and Joe's had just about 50% Ample Time and Space during that entire time. He's averaged 8.1 net yards per drop back when he has Ample Time and Space, and 4.1 net yards when he doesn't have Ample Time and Space. So think of that as when the line provides good time for Joe, it's worth about 4 yards in terms of the expected outcome of the play. Anyway, this game only threw the ball 18 times, had 10 of 18 dropbacks, 56% where he had ample time and space. That's a good percentage, obviously, in a small number of trials in this case, but it was nice that the line was able to provide that kind of protection for him. He was a little bit worse than expected with ATS, largely because of the Macklin play, which was 48 of his 51 yards without ATS. He was better than expected on those. So his actual expected difference is only 3 yards, and that's as close to zero as you can really come. It's not that uncommon to have results that are plus or minus 100 if the game is exceptionally good for Flacco or exceptionally not good. But this was a right-on-the-money performance despite the fact that they didn't throw the ball down the field at all. So I think, in general, good, solid outing for Joe. And it doesn't immediately raise the question of whether he was healthy or not. The play selection and throwing the ball down the field does, but not the result of the passes themselves.
Right. So it's still definitely a wait and see with Joe, which is good that we have a soft start to this season.
Yeah, for 3 games, they've got some opportunities here to hopefully play good defense and win 3 games if they do it well. The Jaguars looked awfully good in week 1. The Browns looked surprisingly good at home against the Pittsburgh Steelers, but they did have some weaknesses on the offensive line that I think the Ravens can exploit. On defense, they look a lot more like a challenge for the Ravens.
Right. So Joe had the one good play with Macklin that we can get excited about, but then he also had to pick the Watson.
Yeah, the pick was not good. Joe seems to throw one of those fairly frequently in Cincinnati. So, having only 18 passes is a good thing. Cincinnati, by the way, they dropped the coverage, and the Ravens did a lot of that in this game as well. You know, obviously is trying to break on the football and make picks like that, and they did a pretty good job of in coverage in this game as well. So Cincinnati didn't do everything this wrong. They just did enough things wrong to lose this game.
Sure. All right. Well, let's get down to the dirt. Let's get into the offensive line.
Okay. So I had a few changes this year, but I need to talk a little bit about some things, ways that I score the offensive line. So some of you may be familiar with Pro Football Focus, for example. The big difference between Pro Football Focus and I, and there are about 5 or 6 or 7 meaningful differences, but probably the biggest one is that they will charge multiple pressures, quarterback hits or sacks on a single play, but they always give an individual player a 1 or a 0 in any category on any play. So they only give away a full sack or no sacks. And that has a distorting impact over time. In particular, a player like Marshall Yanda has benefited tremendously from the fact that he's not charged with partial sacks by PFF. So they say he hasn't had a sack in a very long period of time, and I say he's had about 2.5 if you include partial sacks during that same time. So that's one thing that's a fairly significant difference. There are a few other things as well. We don't need to get into all of them right now. What else do I want to talk about here? I made a little change to my grading system this year, so if you're a fan of the online articles, I would appreciate it if you go to RSR and look at the articles, of course, look at some of the past scoring. But one of the things that I've been kind of harsh on centers and guards in particular, because when the scoring was originally established, the Ravens had 3 outstanding interior linemen, Yanda, Grubbs, and Burke, all playing on the inside. Burke in particular made very few mistakes at center and didn't give up tons of ground, but he made very few mistakes. And so his scoring always came out particularly good. And then using that as kind of a standard going forward, it's been harder for players to attain that. So I dropped the score necessary to pass at center by a little bit, and at guard, same thing. Specifics are out on the website. I won't talk about that anymore.
All right.
I do encourage you, if you don't have it, get Game Pass, NFL Game Pass. It's free if you have a PSL. If you don't, and you know somebody who has a PSL and they're not using it, by all means do that. But even if you don't have either of those, it's about $100 for the season, might be $99, and you get all the games back to 2011 available to you, and you get the coach's film, which contains two different angles that you can kind of follow along with the articles and see what I'm seeing when I grade offensive line play or grade the defense for that matter. So hopefully I offer that transparency and the ability to kind of work along through the film study with me.
Okay. All right, well, let's get to the players. Let's get to let's start with Stanley. He finished 2016 pretty strong. How did he build on that to 2017?
Yeah, well, he sure did. Boy, those last 8 weeks, he really rose and was one of the best left tackles in all of football. In fact, PFF said the last 4 weeks he was. But he was terrific last year. This year, he faced a rookie defensive end, Carl Lawson, who played him very tough. And these guys will meet a lot in the future, so it's a concern that Cincinnati has gotten a kind of a steal of a draft pick in the fourth round, though. A guy who looks like he can pressure the quarterback. He beat Stanley for two separate pressures. And one of them, he flushed the pocket, and that was part of the sack that was involved as well. So
right.
Stanley got a half charge for a sack there. He had a false start. A very imperfect game, particularly from a pass blocking perspective for Stanley, but he did a very good job on run blocking. And, you know, this game had a lot of runs in it, so those are good. They're also a little bit less valuable, but he had six blocks in level two. He pulled successfully the one time he was asked to. He had two highlight blocks, which is a little bit unusual for a tackle to have two of those. And that included a nice push he got on Lawson to push him 8 yards into the secondary as West ran left for 10 yards. So all in all, 0.72 per play, adjusted for the quality of competition in his highlights. That brings him to a C+. And we can only hope that that's the start of his upward trend line for this year, because I think a lot of Ravens really expect Stanley to make the Pro Bowl.
I mean, sure, that would be awesome to have Stanley in the Pro Bowl. And, yeah, we expect what we saw at the end of last season. So I hope that continues. Now, I don't always know what I'm watching, but Hurst, it looked like he pulled a lot. Is that what was going on?
Yeah, I mean, that's a good observation, Josh. They had Hurst pull 10 times in this game. Now, the number of times before Roman has arrived that somebody's had a double-digit pull number is very, very few. Yanda is the most I've ever had 19 in one game, but Hurst had 10 in this game. He hit on six of those. He had one where he actually allowed a negative event on a pull, but it's not great success as a pull ratio, and kind of unfortunate that it wasn't better than that. He had a decent day pass blocking. He did allow half a sack. That was the cleanup portion of the pressure that was allowed by Stanley that I mentioned, where Lawson crossed the pocket and Hurst got beaten outside by Geno Atkins on that play to clean up that sack. If you're going to get beat by somebody, go ahead and get beat by Geno Atkins. All that said, Hurst did some good things as well. He had six blocks in level two. He delivered two pancakes. Those were both on poles. Had a great pancake to cut down Vincent Ray on a play where he helped West reach the edge. And all the notations on time and quarter are all there in the article, so I encourage you to go back and see that. Overall, I gave him a C for the game, 0.70 per play with adjustment for his highlights. And the one thing I'll say about that is this. The Ravens have no right, Ravens fans have no right to expect anything better from Hurst. He's a converted tackle playing out of position at guard. Some people have suggested he might be better there. I don't know about that at all. I think maybe he could help the team more at tackle. But his C, there, if he could do that for all 16 games, the Ravens fans should be thrilled with it.
All right. Well, often just remember, don't expect anything from Hurst but average. All right. But I am expecting stuff from the next man in the line, Jensen. We've been talking about he needs to be like the anchor of this line. How did he?
Yeah, I mean, that's exactly what we've been talking about the whole preseason, is that they need somebody who can stand up to those behemoths in the AFC North, those huge interior defensive linemen. And the Ravens gave the Bengals a lesson in that we talked about on the defensive side. Jensen's problem in this game was not anchoring at all. In fact, all of his deductions came from other sorts of plays. So he had three holding calls in the game. They all came on run plays. And each time, it's a case where I think Ryan is almost trying for a different outcome out of the play. Like, he doesn't win a block unless he pancakes the guy. So one, he pulled, and he it did not really look like much of a hold to me, but he flattened Vigil in the backfield, and they called it a hole. You know, that was the first. Then he had a pancake in level two on Ray, which really influenced the play. It helped Allen get to the outside on a 14-yard screen pass that was late in quarter two. They had a chance to get Tucker in range for a field goal. But Jensen was guilty of holding on that. It was made pretty clear by one of the angles where he had a handful of jersey. And he felt the need to take the guy to the ground. And that play, though, if he hadn't have done something, it would have been tackled in bounds, and it could have been worse even for the Ravens. So I don't blame him too much for that one, but it is what it is. The last one was just ridiculous. It was right out of the WWE. It was late in quarter four with about 4 minutes to go. He took the nose tackle Sims. Now, nose tackles, those are very large men. And Sims was actually moving to Jensen's left. Jensen grabbed him, flipped him to the ground to his right, and flopped on top of him. It was a WWE move, and really something that didn't need to be done. And at that point in the game, obviously, it was just silliness. Nowhere near the play, not really. The hole was one gap to the left. So I think they'll calm him down. I think they will be able to correct that about him. And then I do want to talk about what he did well as well, because he really anchored very well. And the Ravens constantly have traffic behind center when they pull. So you have guards pulling from left to right, from right to left. You have tight ends doing the same thing. And with all that pull activity gone, there wasn't one instance where Jensen got backed up and created a problem by tripping a player. So that was very good. I think they can probably get the holds under control. Without those three holds, he'd have had a B without adjustment. It's definitely, if anybody out there is thinking it's time to move on from Jensen and make a change, I can assure you it is not. They don't have anyone better to play the position right now, and they need to ride it with him.
All right. Speaking of guys that I'm not sure if there's anyone better, Marshall Yanda. He got hurt last year, kind of played through injury last year, and then missed some time. How's he doing at this season? Is he all healthy and back to normal?
Yeah, I mean, he did all that you're mentioning last year where he changed positions, actually, because he wanted to maintain his inside punch. So he changed the left guard from right guard, played through the injury, had a fantastic season, and he continued right on this year as if nothing has happened. And I mean, nothing's happened, and he's improved since the last injury. He only played a handful of preseason snaps. In this game, he gave up two-thirds of a quarterback hit to Geno Atkins. And again, Atkins is their most talented lineman, but he and Jensen shared that one. Otherwise, he had five blocks in level two. He had three pancakes. He pulled successfully on seven of his eight attempts, and he had two other highlights. So pretty much he does everything very well. If he's not a second offensive line coach for this team, I don't know, what you'd ever want in terms of a player who could teach others. It got an A even without adjustment. Just another day at the office, really, for Marshall Yanda in this one.
All right. I mean, and that's what you want from him. He was the guy that you could rely on all last season until he got injured. So, yeah, that's great that he continues that. Now we got to get to the final guy. We got to get to Howard. And I feel like if I introduced him at the beginning of this show, he might be arriving in studio about now. He seemed a little slow out on the field.
You mean if he was in your green room and yeah, had to walk to the studio? Yes,
yeah, I mean if he was right across the room and I just said, come on up to the microphone.
That's really good. Okay, good visual. Yes, Howard looked awfully slow. It's really difficult, honestly, to argue with the aggregate result of his play because he made a lot of the blocks he needed to do. He had a reasonably good effort from a pass blocking standpoint, which is what you want at tackle. I'm just not sure it's duplicatable. So to talk a little bit about what happened, he did give up one quarterback hit. It was the very hard quarterback hit by Dunlap I mentioned earlier near the end of quarter three. And on that play, if you look at it, it's concerning because he just normally a speed rusher will make a quick movement with his hands, but then he'll try and get to the outside quickly and shoulder that tackle, lean his shoulder into that tackle and beat him to the corner, beat him to that back pylon of the pocket, as I call to it, so he can get a piece of the quarterback before he can get the ball off. Well, Dunlap literally walked around Austin on that play. It's like Austin put up his hands, and it was a step to the right to move out and get Dunlap, and he just kind of walked by him and got the quarterback hit. It did not look like there's much there in the way of feet for Austin Howard. So that was very concerning. You kind of get a reinforcement of that when you're talking about his movement in level two. So I don't want to get too complex here, but one of the things tackles have great difficulty in contributing is how to make a run when the play is going the other way. Because most of the players, they immediately go in the other direction and they're left with few opportunities. So they can move to level two and they can try and catch maybe a cornerback from the other side or a safety if they're shaded in one direction, but it's kind of hard for them to get somebody. The other thing they can do is they can make a cut block by going down to the ground and getting that edge defender on their own side to the ground before they can get back over to the left side to help with that play. So they're limited in terms of their options. Now, Howard didn't go to the ground to block anybody in this game, and he moved into level two and had a lot of difficulty getting people to block. He did make 8 blocks in level two, but that was an 8 of 13 conversion ratio. So if you make 61.5%, which is that of your blocks in level two, that's really not good enough. So his speed, I believe his foot speed is going to hurt the Ravens. But I look back at one player the Ravens had a few years ago. They had Willie Anderson in his last year when he played his lone year as a Raven in 2008. And he was a similar plodding elephant of a character who was just very effective as a pass blocker. And if Howard can find a way to contribute as a pass blocker despite this foot speed, he can still be the guy who helps the Ravens.
All right, so don't look for Howard to lead a run and play. He's not going to make you some room.
He might make you some room right at the line of scrimmage, but he's not going to be out there 10 yards in front of
the play. He's not pushing back. Yeah. All right. So overall, a good game for the offensive line, but a game that's kind of hard to judge him really on.
Yeah, I think in a lot of ways it was hard to judge. But if you want to pick out one other thing that's positive about the line that I'm not sure is really reflected in the scores, it's the fact that they ran the ball effectively when they really wanted to run the ball effectively, and they basically were telling the Bengals that they were going to run the ball. And that's in that third quarter, that very long drive they had almost exclusively on the run. They burned a lot of clock, over 9 minutes, and did it all pretty much with the run. And that was a impressive display for this line to be able to do that.
All right, is there even a point in this game to pick an offensive star of the game?
I mean, I think there are offensive stars for Ravens.
Okay.
Who would I go? I'm going to go number three. I'm going to go with Terrence West. Do you want to participate as well in this, Josh, or are you good?
No, I'm good. I'm good. I'll let you take these three.
Okay, sure thing. Okay, so number three, Terrence West. Had a good solid, grinded-out game, 19 carries for 81, I believe, 4.2 yards per carry. So did a solid job and took advantage of some of the space he was given to make some extra yards in level two. I thought that was good. If I had to pick number two, I'd go with Jeremy Maclin. No, you know what? I'm not going to give it to Maclin. I'm going to give it to Watson for being the guy who ran that pick route. He didn't get the acclaim on the play, but he made the play work. I could go with Flacco also on that play and give them all three credit, but I'm not going to do that bogus stuff. It was a great call out the line of scrimmage by Flacco. Number one, Marshall Yanda, kind of far and away, had the best game on the offensive line and was the best of every player, which gets kind of boring when you do that every single week.
Yeah, I was going to say, he's going to be your number one like every week this year, isn't he? You like the way he plays football.
Well, you know, for 10 years now, he's really been the Ravens' best player on the field for a lot of that time.
Yep. Can't argue with that one and when it works. All right, let's get to the Twitter mailbag where we ask you, the listener, to send in your questions about the Ravens or whatever else you want to ask Ken and send them to @FilmStudyRavens on Twitter. We collect them and then we'll bring a few each week or each episode, which I guess is twice a week. Mm-hmm. All right, we got one right here from a regular contributor to the mailbag, Minion Hunter. What about trading a 7th for Smoke Mizzle?
Okay, so Smoke Mizzle lost from the Ravens when they attempted to cut him and put him on their practice squad. The Bears claimed him, and he's now on their 53. So if they're going to trade, they'd have to get trade something, presumably, to the Bears, and a 7th-round draft pick. actually sounds about right, you know, that they could do that. If they picked Mizell back up, then he'd be a guy they'd want to have as a receiving threat, so he could do some of what Woodhead has done in that regard. But he's not really the ideal candidate to replace Woodhead because he's not much of a blocking back. He's a small guy and might very well get steamrolled if he's in there on third down. So while I like the idea of getting Mizell's explosiveness back in this offense, some of that we saw in the preseason, I don't think it's necessarily realistic. The seventh round draft pick, though, would not be too much to give up for him.
Right. I was excited about Woodhead preseason. It was disappointing to see him hurt after, like, one play. What's the plan with him now? Is he? Do we know yet? Is he going to come back this season or help at all?
Yeah, I think he will be back. The Ravens have said 4 to 6 weeks, and it's one of these funny things. I saw the Ravens said 4 to 6 weeks, and then immediately after that, I think it was Adam Schefter tweeted out that Woodhead was going 6 to 8 weeks. He'd already layered in the additional amount of early expectation.
Yeah, but Adam Schefter also is the guy who said Flacco would miss a couple weeks.
All right. Well, yeah, you're right. They're probably both guessing. So if he was 2 weeks ahead on that, maybe he's wrong on this one too. If he's out 4 weeks, the Ravens probably don't want to put him on IR because they'll have to wait an extra 4 weeks to get him back. So you have to wait 8 weeks to get your first player back from designated for not from, from the IR and use one of your two players that are allowed to return. Kennedy is already in that position, and they kept him on the 53 initially before putting him on the IR afterwards so that they could get him to return in about week 8. And the other guy that we haven't figured out what's happening to, and tests were done apparently, but nothing's been announced yet, is Za'Darius Smith. And he looked awfully good from those first few snaps. It would really be a shame if he's lost for the year. The Ravens have come out and said they don't think there's anything wrong structurally with the problem, with the knee. So it might be a high ankle sprain, if that's the truth. You know, he could miss half a season. It could be less than that. And it might really be a question of whether the appropriate guy to go on IR is him or Woodhead, or maybe neither, depending on how quickly they'll be back. So a kind of a complex thing that they have to deal with and allocate that resource of the spot on IR that they'd like to hold.
All right. Makes sense. And all right, let's get back into the Twitter questions. This is Chris Sadowski. You know I'm great with names.
I think it's Sadowski.
Sadowski? All right, we'll go with Sadowski.
Once had three Sadowskis playing on the same team at one time.
All right, Chris.
The 1961 Angels.
All right, Chris Sadowski says he's got two questions for you. Will Terrence West be able to be the bell cow for the offense this year? And which tight end do you see having the best chance to stand out this season? They did suit up four tight ends on Sunday.
Right. So the play is being apportioned out. So let's answer the tight end question while I can first. So Watson made the great play on the pick play. So we know about that one. He got 40 snaps in the game, by the way. Boyle, who is more of a blocking tight end, but was used once on a naked boot to the right for a short reception, about a 10-yard gain. He had 45 snaps in the game. They need him more for blocking. He honestly did not have a great blocking game. It included a holding call in this game. So that's an area where he needs to improve. Max Williams, the second-round draft pick from a season ago, played 17 snaps. So, you know, if this is going to be Max Williams' breakout season, I would expect him to have played more snaps in that first game. But the opportunity may still come. I mean, the Ravens certainly need a tight end to step up. If I had to bet on who it'd be right now, I'd say after the first game, Watson is the most likely, given what he did in setting up the Macklin touchdown.
All right.
And then the other question was about West, and is he the bell cow? Yeah, real good, solid game from West. If bell cow means have a season like McClain did in 2008, where he rushed for about 1,000 yards, 4.0 out of the fullback spot, and West is obviously a tailback, but if you're looking for a performance like that where he doesn't necessarily have a gaudy yards per carry number, but you know can deliver on some grind out yards, I think West can be that guy. I don't really see him as the enormous breakaway threat that in fact I don't really think the Ravens have one at this point. So you know, but could he contribute to the offense in that way? I think sure.
Now I don't think he's ever had a 1,000 yard season, correct? I think like his highest season total is in the 700s.
It sounds right. It might have been last year, but I can look that up for us real quick while
All right.
we do that.
All right. Okay. Well, while you look that up, I'll go on to our final Twitter sure. question, which is from John Denton 7. And we've already addressed this, I think, a good amount at the beginning of the episode. Is the short passing game by design or due to Joe's current physical limitation? And okay, I think so I can answer that with no one knows. It's too early to tell. Do you have anything else to add except we don't know?
No, I guess I really don't. I do think it's a combination of factors that influence this game. So the Ravens wanted to get the game over. They didn't want to take chances on interceptions, and maybe the chemistry wasn't there with his receivers. He threw only that one pass that was 17 yards that was at all down the field, and you know, that obviously is nothing for Joe. Joe can throw the ball 55 yards in the air or more. Mile High Miracle went almost 60 yards in the air. So you know, this is a very unusual game from Joe Flacco, but the one thing I'll say about him is he's been completely adaptable to the situation around him. So when the Ravens have needed him to not throw passes, he's done that. You know, the wild card game at New England, that's exactly what he did. In this game, it's exactly what he did. And when they need him to throw the ball 60 times, he'll do that too. It may not work out, but he'll try.
Right. He's not a guy who has to make it about himself. Mm-hmm. So, all right. Final Twitter question here from at Josh Soroka. So the Ravens just announced that they signed Josh Woodrum to the practice squad. And I'm getting tired of hearing about this guy from my brother, a fellow Liberty grad. Will this guy, Josh Woodrum, will he ever make it into the NFL?
I think it is probably unlikely that Josh Woodrum will ever start an NFL game. That's what I'll say. Could he ever be the second quarterback on a team and come in to, you know, play some snaps? That's possible. We've certainly had a few guys in Ravens history who've done that, but I don't think he'll ever start.
Never, I mean, practice squad's not a bad job. I mean, they get paid too, so.
Yeah, they get paid a little bit of money. It ain't much.
Right, but, all right, good. No. Did you find anything with the Terrence West?
774 yards last year with the Ravens is his career high.
All right. Well, the Ravens did something to get his career high last year, so. Hopefully he can push that a little bit more this season. All right, Ken, all your writings up on Russell Street Report. How can everyone find it?
Yeah, if you go over to Russell Street Report and you look for film study there, you'll see my archive, and it goes back to 2006 or 7. You can see articles and lots of information, including several years of offensive line play that have charts there that you can follow, so get a sense of things and hopefully enjoy it and follow along with Game Pass. And I also want, while we're here, Josh, to tell the folks about your show on 336, because it's a really cool local podcast about the Orioles.
Yeah, Orioles and Ravens, because let's face it, the Orioles season is over. They blew it in the past week, and who's to blame? We don't know. Is it Buck? Is it Duquette? But the Orioles made a move this week with taking Jason Aquino off the 40-man and putting Austin Hayes on the roster because they wanted another outfielder. And that got us a little frustrated because it doesn't make sense to us, so we don't know if there's more division in the warehouse or what's going on. But we celebrated the Ravens' victory and the Ravens looking really good. And then we got out a lot of frustration this week about how the Orioles season has gone. But yeah, that's over on section336.com.
And you're not going to tell me what happened tonight because I still have this game on pause here. I'm going to watch it after we get off.
I will not tell you. The game did end, but I will not tell you how it ended. All right, Ken. So we want people to go on over to iTunes and rate the show 5 stars, write a review, tell your friends, and they can find the show over at Russell Street Report. They can find it on Facebook. They can find it on iTunes or wherever you get podcasts. All right, Ken, we will talk next week on Monday evening as we look back at hopefully another Ravens victory.
Life's good, Josh.
All right, have a good week.